Consistent with Assembly Bill Number 361, meetings will be held by teleconference until further notice. This meeting can be viewed on Channel 20 and is available live streaming on the city's website and on www.slow-span.org. Members of the public may invite, members of the public may participate in tonight's meeting for public comment during the course of the meeting by calling in at 805-321-6639, and that phone line is currently open. So with that, let us proceed to a moment of silence where, if you would, in your hearts, have a moment of silence for the conflict that is going on in the Ukraine. So if you would, please. Thank you, everyone, for joining us in that moment of silence. Next we have our flag salute, and I'd like to invite our Community Development Director, Mr. Bruce Buckingham, to lead us in the flag salute tonight, please.
Good evening, and thank you. Please place your hand over your heart and repeat after me. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you, Mr. Buckingham, for that flag salute. And next I'll turn to our city clerk for a roll call, please.
Councilmember Miller.
Here.
Councilmember Robert.
Here.
Councilmember Rushing.
Here.
Mayor Pro Tem Bright.
Here.
Mayor Lee.
Here. So we do have a quorum, and so we will proceed. And that'll take us to our next item, which is our closed session announcements. Next, I'll turn to our city attorney, Mr. Hale, to provide any closed session announcements, please.
Thank you, Mayor. That's the council meeting on February 15th. We convened in closed session with a conference with legal counsel on existing litigation related to the city of Grover Beach versus Albert Bruce. We had no reportable action coming out of that closed session.
Very good. Thank you, sir. Appreciate that. So that'll take us to our agenda review, where at the moment any member of the council can ask for a change in the order of business or clarification on the agenda. So let's see if there's anyone who has any questions on the agenda as presented. If not, I'll go ahead and accept a motion to proceed as agendized.
Well, I'll move to adopt the agenda as posted.
I'll second that.
We have a motion and a second. All those in favor say aye.
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 All those opposed? Motion carries. We will proceed as agendized, which takes us to our ceremonial calendar, of which we have none tonight, our presentation calendar, of which we have none this evening. So that takes us to public communication, where at this time the council will allow public communication with additional comments, if necessary, towards the end of the regular business, after the regular business items. Any member of the public may address the council for a period not to exceed 3 minutes total on any item of interest within the jurisdiction of this council. The council will listen to all communications. However, in compliance with the Brown Act, the council cannot act on items that are not on tonight's agenda. So I do invite those to call in at 805-321-6639 if you would like to speak under public comments. So with that, let me turn to our city clerk and see if there's anyone on the line for public comments.
We have Catherine Reiser.
Good evening, Ms. Reiser.
Hi. Hello. The reason I'm calling is I'm challenged right now with trying to find housing, and I'm a senior. They have they're selling my rental home where I've lived for 8 years, and what I'm finding is the biggest challenge is that the owners and the property management companies are requiring 3 times the monthly rent in income. So if you find something that's $2,000 a month, you have to bring in $72,000 a year just to qualify. Most seniors cannot afford that. So what I was wondering is if possibly Grover Beach can designate some of the ARPA funds to subsidize for the owners so that the owners can sort of level the playing field for seniors so that they can perhaps be able to qualify for something besides living under a bridge.
Terrible situation.
Very good. Thank you, Ms. Reiser. Was there any other comments you wanted to make?
Nope. I think it was just a suggestion for your consideration and maybe your next meeting.
Very good. Appreciate your comments and your input. We'll perhaps address some direction to staff at the close of public comment. But let me turn back to our city clerk, see if there's anyone else in the line for public comment. Thank you.
No, we have no one else on the line.
Very good. I will go ahead and close public comment, bring it back to the council, and maybe Mr. Brunson, our city manager, realizing the public commenter. So have we heard of any approaches of either organizations in whether it be the Five Cities Homeless Coalition or Slow Legal Aid Foundation who are providing perhaps services to either seniors or others that find themselves in this situation? Have we heard of any organizations that are helping with this situation?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor and council members. And certainly the caller situation is very difficult to hear. And we know that housing is such an important and difficult proposition in our area. The Five Cities Homeless Coalition does have a program to provide funding for helping meet security deposits. That is part of the program that we've helped fund through CDBG housing assistance dollars over the last several years. So that could be an avenue. Also, there are potentially some countywide efforts through CAPSLO, HASLO, or some of the other agencies that are in our general area. Right now, the city does not have a dedicated funding mechanism for rental payments. That is something that the city could look at if the council wanted to consider it. That would be a new program that we currently don't provide and aren't really equipped from a staff standpoint to oversee. So that would be a resource request that the council would have to be aware of in looking at this. We are talking about ARPA funding later today, but also next Monday we'll be discussing our council goals, which include housing. And so one avenue is that the council could have some conversation next Monday about how we're implementing the housing and homelessness major city goal, and if this is something to consider further.
Very good. Thank you, Mr. Brunson. So, and I'm hoping Ms. Reiser is still on the line and was able to capture some of those comments and with several different avenues to hopefully provide a little bit of assistance, and or perhaps you can join us next Monday on March 7th for our goal discussion. So with that, let me check back in. Next, that'll take us to our consent agenda, where there are a number of routine items that are listed for consideration as a group. Let me first check and see if there's any members of the council that have any questions on the four items we have this evening under our consent agenda. Go ahead and unmute yourself if you do. Seeing no one unmute themselves, I'll go ahead and bring it back to the public comment under the consent agenda, which would be at 805-321. 6639, and I'll turn to our city clerk and see if there's anyone on the line for public comments on the consent agenda.
No, we have no one on the line.
Very good. Appreciate that. I will go ahead and close public comment on the consent agenda, bring it back to the council for any comments or a motion.
Well, I'll make a motion that we approve the four items on the consent agenda.
I'll second that.
We have a motion by Mayor Pro Tem Bright, a second by Councilmember Robert. I'll turn to our city clerk for a roll call, please.
Mayor Pro Tem Bright.
Yes.
Councilmember Robert.
Yes.
Councilmember Miller.
Yes.
Councilmember Rushing.
Yes.
Mayor Lee.
Yes. Very good. So we do have an approved consent agenda this evening, which concludes work on that item and takes us to our public hearings, which is item five, which is our fourth public hearing on the creation of a district-based city council election system and selection of a final district map. We will have public comment on this item, so I do invite folks to call in at 805 321-6639. But first, let me turn it to our Deputy City Manager, Ms. Erickson, for a presentation, please.
Thank you, Mayor Lee, and good evening, members of the council. Just wait a second for our presentation to come up. So as you said, I'm here to introduce our fourth and final public hearing for our districting process. Next slide, please. Just a reminder of our process thus far. In June and July of last year, we held the first two hearings. Those were pre-draft map hearings where your council provided direction on communities of interest to consider and also got public input on the process. There was a public workshop that was also held in October. And then in January of this year, we had our third public hearing where your council considered several public maps as well as maps that were drawn by our consulting firm. And your council directed staff to bring forward four of those maps for final consideration today. Upon your council's selection of a final map today, staff will plan to bring the introduction of the ordinance and the adoption of the ordinance in your regular meetings in March. Next slide, please. Just a reminder of the rules for drawing districts. Under federal law, the districts need to have substantially equal population, which case law defines as anything under 10% total deviation. And under the Federal Voting Rights Act, of course, you cannot engage in racial gerrymandering or intentionally draw districts in order to dilute racial minority voting influence. Under the California Fair Maps Act, we have criteria that need to be considered in the selection of maps. The district should be geographically contiguous. They should avoid division of neighborhoods or communities of interest. Boundaries should be easily identifiable by the public, and districts should be drawn to be compact. And of course, we should not favor or discriminate against any political party in the drawing of the maps. Next slide, please. And as I mentioned before, your council did provide staff direction on what communities of interest you wanted considered in the drawing of the maps. Those were renter versus owner occupied housing, multifamily housing versus single family housing, high density and commercial areas and the surrounding areas, the coastal zone and the non-coastal areas, and then school attendance areas. And with that, I will turn it over to Dr. Daniel Phillips with NDC, who drew the maps and will give you more information on the final maps.
Thank you, Ms. Erickson, and good evening, Council and Mr. Mayor. So just as a reminder, the district numbering system is just a proposal. So where you'll see District 1, District 2, District 3, and District 4, it's not set in stone. So if you would like to change up the numbering, you have that option. But as things stand now, District 1 would be toward the north and west, and District 4 would be toward the south and east. And they are colored so that District 1 is pink, 2 is blue, 3 is green, and 4 is purple. Next slide, please. So there are four focus plans on the table tonight, and one of those focus plans is actually a slight revision to Plan 901, which we're calling Plan 901B. So you'll see the original 901 is to the left and the revised 901B is to the right. And so the change that was made was to adjust the boundary of District 1 so that Plan 901B has a lower total population deviation. It goes down to 7.8% from where the original was at 9.5%. And so there is technically any plan with a total population deviation under 10% is considered equal population. However, there is more risk when you get closer to that 10% threshold, especially because there is rumblings about court challenges to the census data and a particular practice that the census utilized called differential privacy, which is being challenged. And if those cases were to be successful, it could require a redrawing of districts that are no longer population balanced after that census data is reconfigured. So the idea is, if you want to be safer, it's probably best to try to have a total population deviation that is on the lower side, just in case one of those core challenges is successful. But as things stand now, using the data as we have it from the census, all of these plans that are in front of you tonight are considered equal population. And so the benefit of the original 901 is that you do have straighter boundaries, and with 901B, it's a little less straight. But they both take the approach where you have a boundary between District 2 and 3 along Grand Avenue. And so you have a District 3 where the Latino population in the city is more concentrated, and you have 30% of the citizen voting age population in that district being Latino. Next slide, please. The other two focus plans that are in front of you tonight are plans 904 and 905. And you'll see at the bottom of each of these plans the key statistics, including the proposed election sequence and the total population deviation, and which district is the highest Latino district. So you'll see that plan 904 has a total population deviation of just over 7%, while 905 has the lowest at less than 5. And the most Latino district has just under 30% of its citizen voting age population being Latino. So the plan 905 takes the approach where you concentrate the high density commercial residential area around Grand Avenue into District 2. And so that would be compared to the other plans where that area is split among multiple districts, such as plan 905, which takes a quadrant approach, dividing the city into Northwest, Northeast, Southwest, and Southeast quadrants. Of course, they can't be perfect quadrants because of the population concerns, but to the best extent possible, you follow Grand Avenue, and then there's a two block difference down between districts 2 and 4. So I believe under all these plans, it is the same proposed election sequence of districts 1 and 2 being up in 2022 and districts 3 and 4 being up for election in 2024. But that is a proposal, and it is ultimately up to you, the council, to decide what the sequence should be for these districts. Next slide, please. So what you see here is a potential decision path for trying to decide what plan would be the best for your city. Now, I emphasize potential. You may decide that you want to decide this differently, but I thought I would just lay this out here as something to consider. So the first question that you might want to ask yourselves is, do you think that the coastal area would be better represented by one council member or multiple? So if multiple, then plan 905 is probably your best option, because of all the focus plans, that's the only one which splits the coastal area among multiple districts. But if you think it would be better represented by just one council member, then you can move on to the next question, which is, do you think that the commercial slash high density residential area would be better represented by one council member or multiple? If one council member, then plan 904 is probably your best option, because that's the only one where it's concentrated into that one district. But if multiple, you may wish to proceed to the final question, which is, do you prefer districts that are closer in population or have more easily identifiable boundaries? So if you prefer more balance, Plan 901B is probably your best option. And if you prefer clearer boundaries, then Plan 901, the original, is probably your best option. So that can be a way to kind of eliminate different plans and narrow down to the one you think is the best. Next slide, please. This is the last slide I have, which is just to solicit any questions you might have about these focus plans and hear which plan you might prefer. And I also want to refer you to the interactive review map where all these focus plans are posted as layers at the very top. So you can look at those for a detailed look at each plan. So thank you for your attention and I welcome your questions.
Very good. Thank you, Dr. Phillips. I appreciate that. Let me turn first to staff and see if there is anything towards the end of the presentation that you wanted to add.
Nope, that's it.
Okay. Very good. Appreciate that. Great. So I will open this up to public comment in just a moment at 805-321-6639. But first, I wanted to check in with council members to see if they had any questions. I would encourage us to keep our comments until after public comment, since there will be a discussion for on each of the maps. So let's see if there's any questions for Dr. Phillips. Mayor Pro Tem Bright.
Thank you. Thank you for the presentation. After four times, now I'm starting to get it. So it seems a little easier to understand. So I just have one question, and that is regarding the possibility of the census numbers being challenged. Do you think that we are at risk with, say that my colleagues decided that they wanted to go with Plan 901, I guess the original 901 that was at 9.something%. I can't find it in front of me now. Mm-hmm. Would that be a concern?
I think that it would be a little riskier because it's quite close to that 10% threshold. Now, so the possibility is if these court challenges are successful and the census redoes its data, I would say it's unlikely, but it's a possibility. And the effects on the data in Grover Beach could theoretically go either way. It could result in it being slightly lower, but it could also be slightly higher and go past the 10% threshold. So if that were the case, then there's a potential that you would have to go back and redraw and do this process. Not exactly the same process, because it would be a redistricting at that point and not require the whole four.
Okay.
Yeah, but it's something to be mindful of, that possibility.
Very good. That was my question, and I just wanted to make sure I understood you correctly. So I appreciate the information. Thank you, Mayor.
Mm-hmm. Very good. Thank you, Mayor Pro Tem. Let's see if there's other members of the council that have questions. Go ahead and unmute yourself. And Councilmember Rushing, I think you might have your camera off, just as a FYI. Or for some reason I'm not seeing him on my screen.
Looks like I'm on.
Okay, I just have you as a black box, so it's all good. So, with that, did you have any questions?
No, I do not. Thank you very much.
Very good. Sorry about that. So let me turn to Councilmember Miller or Councilmember Robert. See if there's any questions from either of you.
Maybe
Councilmember Miller.
Thank you, Mayor Lee. I guess just to clarify what I just heard so that I make sure I understand. So it's highly unlikely that the census numbers would be challenged, but there's more of a possibility if we get closer to that 10%, and we're at 9.5%, correct? So even if we decide to go with MAP 901, it's likely legally defensible. Is that correct?
Yeah, so if the data stays the same, then you're good, because under 10% is considered presumptively constitutional. And so the only potential concern is if that data is reanalyzed, and it ends up that you're no longer under 10%. But that's, I can't put a number on the probability that that would happen, but I could say that the lower your total population deviation, the less and less likely your numbers are to suddenly be over 10%, and you would need to redraw.
I think I understand. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and thank you, Daniel. I just to clarify, Councilman Miller, it's, I think, pretty difficult to predict which way the data will change. And so really, we could end up with a situation where the total population deviation goes lower. And so at this point, while there is some potential risk, I think there's very little, most likely.
And maybe just a quick clarifying question for me is that obviously 10% is the presumptive similar, but there has been no challenges to date for someone who's been underneath that 10%. Is that correct? So we're anticipating the no challenge and so forth, we would be okay at 9.5%.
Yes, that's correct. You can only go off of the data you have now, and that's the only data that you will be judged by unless that data suddenly changes. But as it stands now, it would be considered equal population.
Gotcha. Okay, very good. Appreciate the clarification. So let's see, one last check on questions. Don't see anybody unmuting themselves, so I will go ahead and invite folks to call in for public comment on this item at 805-321-6639. And I'll go ahead and open the public hearing and turn to our city clerk and see if there's anyone on the line for public comment on this item.
Yes, we have Wayne Montgomery.
We would be okay at 9.5.
Good evening, Mr. Montgomery.
To speak. Hi. I want to comment on the maps for election districts.
Certainly, and if you would, and I apologize, Mr. Montgomery, hold on for just one moment. If you would go ahead and mute the meeting on in your background, that would be appreciated so we can clearly hear your comments.
I've just muted it.
Thank you, sir.
Okay, now I find myself in a peculiar situation. Ordinarily, I think of business having motives and objectives in contrast to citizens who are not in business. However, I feel that the Grand Corridor should be as much as possible in the same district. I think for economic development purposes, that's the best. And I also feel that it's very difficult to decide on the differences in each of these plans. And what I personally would like to see is let's take one, let's go for a while and see how it goes, and then change after that. But my current comment is about the Grand Corridor being in one single district so that the businesses can work with the Chamber of Commerce and the City Council and the council member who represents that district. Thank you.
Thank you for those comments, Mr. Montgomery. Let me check in with our city clerk, see if there's anyone else on the line for public comment.
We have Mr. C on the line.
Mr. C, thank you for joining us.
Hi. I'm calling today to voice some concerns about Ramona Park, because I saw that the city removed
Excuse me, sir.
On how?
Sir, I don't mean but to interrupt I you, know but this is.
I know this is about the district. I know that. I just want to say that keep in mind, like, if we're going to change the district, then keep in mind the unhoused folks. And whatever you do, however you change the district, keep them in mind. And also, like, the social services. And I just want to, like, honestly, I just want to voice my concern about what happened, how they were removed. Y'all could clean the park. The park didn't really need that much cleaning. But if y'all wanted to clean the park, y'all could have done that without removing and displacing people, especially right now during a deadly pandemic. if you're going to have shelters for people, don't ask for all these requirements that they can use substance, that they make it more accessible. Because there is the crisis. People should not have to sleep on the streets when temperatures are freezing or extreme. And regardless of the temperature and the climate, people should not be sleeping on the street. Also, with all and you know, before like money becomes an issue, money is not an issue. With all the tax revenue that has the city has came across with the cannabis dispensaries, y'all have enough funds and resources to give it to the people. Because y'all were gonna fix the streets and roads, but last time I went there, didn't see much of that, just a little bit. So there's a lot of money, there's a lot of funds, there's a lot of resources. Distribute that to the people. Don't just let, if you are going to remove people, displace people, give them somewhere to stay without all these requirements. Because that is a violation of human rights. And there's also been a lot of, I spoke with a lot of the folks who stayed at Ramona Park, and they had to constantly put up with Grover Beach PD harassing them on a daily basis. And, you know, the only people I've seen complaining about the unhoused people is the realtors, because people in those neighborhoods that live near Ramona Park, they haven't really been saying much about it besides realtors and business owners. So if there's any business owners in Grover Beach listening to this conversation, I ask you to please find it in your heart to have some a little bit of compassion, okay? Because, like I said, this is a crisis that people are dying on the streets on the daily. So, and just because it's not happening on a daily in Grover Beach, it doesn't mean that it hasn't happened before. So that's my main concern with the districting, the redistricting of the area. Like, make sure it's for the best interest of the people. Because
very good. Thank you, Mr. C. Appreciate your comments. So let me turn back to our city clerk and see if there's anyone else on the line for public comment on our redistricting hearing.
No, we have no one else on the line.
Very good. Thank you very much. I will go ahead and close public comment on this item and bring it back to the council. We did hear a couple commenters, and it did generate a question or two. So let me turn to perhaps Ms. Erickson to answer a couple questions for me. So Mr. Montgomery mentioned that we should, I'll see if I can paraphrase this, take one and then go for a while. So so how long, if we, when we choose a district map this evening, when's the next time that we're required to change it, and how often can we change it?
Yeah, it would be at the next census by law. That's when we draw new district lines, and you don't redraw in between unless there's a legal reason for having to do that. There are some statutory triggers. For example, if there was a court decision that Mr. Phillips was talking about, we may have to make a minor change, but otherwise there would not be another chance to change it until the next census.
Okay, so this would be the map that we choose for the next effectively 10 years?
Correct.
Okay, very good. Appreciate that. So the other question had to do with something that I think that was slightly outside the district boundaries. So I think I will was going to make some comments on that subject during our council communications this evening. So I think I will keep our the discussion at the moment to our district maps, unless there was other questions that got generated by council members during the course of public comments. So go ahead and unmute yourself if you have questions. Very good. Then it is time, folks. We have had our fourth public hearing. We have four maps in front of us for consideration. Who wants to start the conversation?
I will.
Mayor Pro Tem Bright.
Thank you. I appreciate it. Well, the four plans are all, they all have good points and the opposite. But from my perspective, how do you want to do this? Do you want me just to talk about it? You want me to give you my numbers or my plan numbers? So, how do you want to do this, Mayor?
I think from that perspective, if you have a clear choice that you'd like to present, or if you have a hierarchy of choices for discussion, I would say let's go ahead and have you present your choice of a map, unless you would like someone else to go first, in which case I'm more than happy to go first if anyone so desires.
I mean, I have no problem either way. I do have a clear choice. But if you'd like to start the discussion.
I think you have the microphone. The floor is yours.
All right. Okay. So my first choice is 904, the hybrid map, mainly because it favors the community of interest and keeps three of them intact. The Latino COI, the coastal COI community of interest, and then the multifamily high density, as well as Grand Avenue. The population deviation, I thought was at 7.2 prior to hearing the presentation, I thought was fine. And I think it probably still will be based on what I'm hearing. So those are my reasons why Plan 904, mainly because of the keeping the community of interests intact. Thank you.
Very good. Appreciate that. So let's who wants to proceed next? Councilmember Miller. Did I see you unmute yourself? Or was that?
I was trying to, but okay. I was clicking on the wrong buttons. Thank you. I think my top map is 901 because of the easily identifiable boundaries. So it meets that criteria, but also all of the others that we've talked about. And then if we had a second choice, if we were going there, my second choice would be 905, the quadrant approach, kind of for the same reasons, just easily identifiable boundaries. Thank you.
Very good. Appreciate that. So, Councilmember Roberts.
Thank you, Mayor. I'm going to agree with Councilmember Miller. I do like the boundaries of the 901. A little concerned about the close to 10%, but I mean, it's 10% now, and like it could go down. So I don't know that that should be an issue. So I'm going to go with 901. Thank you.
Very good. Councilmember Rushing.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. 901 is also my favorite. 901B works, but I really do love the simplicity and clean lines. I know that lines are, well, what's the right way to say this? Having well-defined districts is going to be incredibly important. Having folks know exactly where it is they are, where their districts lie, not having a bunch of zigzags throughout the city. I like how clean it is. We do have a smallish town on the grand scheme of things. So being able to break it off into these zones is, I think, would be great. If not 901, I would defer to 905 as my second, with 901B hanging out in that range as well. Thank you.
Very good. So so I guess that leaves me to weigh in. And my first choice is also going to be 901 for a couple of different reasons. It meets the criteria that I think was Ms. Erickson or perhaps it was Dr. Phillips had presented, where the coastal zone is all in one district. In the map, it would be District 1. The school district boundaries are more closely represented between 2 and 3, between where students would be going for our elementary schools. And then it also does provide for District 3 with a high propensity of Latino voters. So those are my reasons for 901, with I can see 905 as being an alternate choice with respect to that, but I would be okay with 901B as well. So so perhaps as we've got a majority for 901. So let me turn to Mayor Pro Tem Bright to see if either she's okay with 901 or would like to continue advocating for 904 to move forward under that approach.
So 901, the original 901, I believe, was my last choice. It was. Mainly because of the communities of interest that are not intact in that map. And now the large population deviation, but that was not part of my issue, although I did note it even before we had this presentation. It breaks up the multifamily community of interest. And as I said, it has that high population deviation. So 901B was my number two choice. I'm not real fond of how they zig and zag, but oftentimes that's what we have to do in order to get the population to be where it needs to be. 901B, because it keeps 3 of the communities of interest intact, and as well as the Latino community of interest. Well, they're all quite high, no matter which plan we choose, either 29 or 30%. I think there might be one that's a little bit higher than that, as well as the population deviation is less than 901 at 7.8%. So I could support 901B if I'm not sure where we were in the in who voted for what. Tell you the truth, I was trying to keep track and then I lost track. So
from that perspective, the remaining 4 council members had all voted for 901, and then you were 904, and then we had, I think, second choice for most was either 905 or 901B, but so far it is 4 council members at 901, so which is why I wanted to give you an opportunity to make your case and see if there was others that wanted to change their Thank thinking you. based upon your approach.
Thank you. So my last comment would be, I believe that keeping communities of interest intact is more important than a straight line. That's basically how I see it. So thank you for the time.
Of course. And as I turn to my fellow council members to see if there's anyone who unmutes himself, I'll just make a quick comment that I think I was balancing which communities of interest to kind of see maintained in districts, because as I mentioned, I think the coastal district on plan 901 is all encompassed in a single district, and then school boundaries for either Grover Heights or Grover Elementary or Fair Grove, so we're kind of predominantly maintained on 901. And then for another thought of mine is that 903 901 District 3 was an area where I saw some population growth as a possibility. And I think in 901, that was encompassing the kind of the lower end of our population. And so with the People Self-Help Housing Project coming in there and potentially some other residential or multi-use projects coming down Grand Avenue, that was my thought for 903 being one that would in 10 years get us closer to parity on population. So I think I tend to agree with your discussion on communities of interest. I think we just were kind of looking at potentially slightly different communities of interest to keep together. So I'm inclined to stay with 901, but let's see if there's other members of the council that want to weigh in on the discussion. I think Councilmember Miller, you had unmuted yourself previously, and then I cut you off. I apologize. So, but let me turn to Councilmember Miller.
Thank you, Mayor Lee. For the reasons you've listed, and mostly because I appreciate the clear boundaries, I'm going to stay with 901. That's my top choice. Thank you.
You're good. Councilmember Rushing or Councilmember Robert?
I would love to stick with 901 as well, please.
I agree also, Mayor, 901. Thank you.
Very good. So with that, I think we have had some discussion. So let's see if someone is prepared to make a motion to move forward with a specific map, please.
I'll move to proceed with Plan 901 as our final district.
I'll second that.
Very good. We have a motion and a second. And first, let me turn to Ms. Erickson to make sure that gives you a clear direction on what needs to proceed in the motion.
It does. Thank you.
Okay. Very good. So any additional comments? If not, I'll turn to our city clerk for roll call, please.
Councilmember Miller.
Yes.
Councilmember Robert.
Yes.
Councilmember Rushing.
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Bright.
Yes.
Mayor Lee.
Yes. Very good. So thank you, everyone. Good conversation, good discussion. We now have a district map for our 21-22 transition to district elections. Let me turn to Ms. Erickson very quickly, and perhaps Dr. Phillips is going to anticipate my question here. Is do we need to decide tonight, or would it be part of the ordinance introduction as to which districts would be up for election in this first cycle?
Assuming that your council doesn't want to see changes to the numbering, it would be 1 and 2. Up in 2022, and then 3 and 4 up in 2024.
I mean, kind of how it is in the lower left-hand corner of the document that I neglected to look at for that particular sequence. And so I will anticipate that council did then just provide direction that districts 1 and 2 would be in this election year, and then districts 3 and 4 would be in 2024. Okay, very good. So is there any other action that we need to do or any direction we need to provide in advance of the ordinance introduction on March 14th?
I don't believe so. I'll defer to our city attorney just to make sure there's nothing he needs for the ordinance drafting.
And Mr. Hale, you are still on mute.
Sorry, Council. I just dropped off by accident, so I'm back.
Welcome back. Did you hear Ms. Erickson's question?
I apologize. I was, I think, off the air at the moment.
Okay. No. I was just making sure there was no other information you needed for the drafting of the ordinance.
No, I think Matt and I talked a little bit about the fact that there are some cities that allow for a vacancy to be filled if a council member is in office and during that term, that position becomes vacant, even though it may be after the election, they would have a right to fill it at large. Some do not. So I'm assuming, unless directed otherwise, that the council would want to fill that by an election appointment or a district appointment as opposed to an at-large appointment. But it can be done either way. So I know Matt and I talked about it, and I think we were leaning towards the district appointment. If that vacancy takes place when there's 2 years left in the term, after the district election ordinance is in place. But I'll defer to the council in terms of your direction.
So thank you, Mr. Hill. Perhaps a kind of a clarifying understanding on my part is, so for instance, let's say there's an unplanned vacancy in districts 3 or district 4, which would be the 2024 election, then the intent under your, that you're looking for policy on tonight would be for step A, for the council to determine whether to fill it via a district only representative, or, and then perhaps if that's unsuccessful, then going to an at-large selection, since both of those seats in District 3 and District 4 were at-large elections.
Clarifying a little bit, make it somewhat easy. You're elected prior to this ordinance going in place, and you have 2 years left in your term, and for whatever reason, that position now becomes vacant. Some cities, like the city of Kandala, the council will fill that vacancy by an appointment at large. Now, some cities would suggest that once that ordinance goes in place for district elections, notwithstanding that particular term where the vacancy or
is it just me or is Mr. Hale frozen?
Okay. when that term comes due, like in 2024, and a vacancy were to happen after that, then it would be an appointment by district, not by at large. So it is only for the occurrence of a vacancy that in the district works. Does that make sense?
Unfortunately, you were breaking up a little bit, but I think I gathered that. But let me turn to our city manager, Mr. Bronson, for interpretation of Mr. Hale.
Sure. Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Just to underscore, there is no state law governing this. This is not a situation that really has occurred to our knowledge and to what Dr. Phillips has mentioned to us. So our default would be to follow through and seek a district appointment process in the event of an unexpired term vacancy. And I think that would be, in staff mind, keeping with the intent of our transition to district elections and district representation. And so staff would pursue that approach absent any changes to city code the council would put in place for this unique two-year time period before we have the full transition to district elections. So council does not need to take any action. We would still be working with the district process and working diligently to make people aware if there was an unexpired vacancy. It's only if council wants to put in something in place that we would bring an ordinance to you at a later date for that.
Okay, so I'm seeing some nodding heads from council members. So let's see if there's any questions on that approach or if we're supportive of that approach. And actually, before we do that, so I realize that our city attorney is still frozen in my screen. Do we need to pause until we can get him back? No. Okay, so we can proceed. Okay, very good. Then let me turn to Mayor Pro Tem Bright for her input on this.
Thank you. Actually, it is another question. I do believe that once we go districts, we should follow that path. My only concern is oftentimes we don't always have a whole lot of people who are coming forward in a maybe not in a certain district. So I guess my question is if we decide that we want to go with a district appointment, but if there isn't anyone who is in that district willing to serve, can we then just go out to an at-large type of appointment? That's my question.
Okay. I'll turn to either the city manager or deputy city manager to...
Go ahead, Matt.
I think what you're hearing from staff is that there is not a clear direction in state law in this interim time period where we have a council that's been elected at large and we're transitioning into a district-based election system. There's really no guidance from state law. In this next two-year period, it is up to the council. But beyond that, you have to find somebody within the district. And if nobody steps up to run, then you have to appoint within the district. And if nobody applies, you may have to knock on doors within the district. You don't have the option to appoint from another district once you have district elections in place. So I think I would flip it around to a positive side to say it's incumbent upon the city to do everything we can to help promote representation across the districts through communication, advocacy, community engagement, involvement. Because once we have district elections, there's no turning back on the district representation.
Thank you. I appreciate that explanation.
Very good. Let me turn to Ms. Erickson, see if there's anything she wanted to add to that conversation.
No, I think Matt summed it up pretty well. And you know, as more of the smaller jurisdictions are moving toward district elections, I think that it's possible we'll get more clarifying legislation at the state level, and it may be not the best to wait for that.
Okay. Very good. Let me see if other members of the council want to weigh in on the approach that I think Mayor Pro Tem Bright was perhaps advocating for. Mr. Bronson clarified in the fact that if we have an unplanned vacancy from a at-large seat while we're in districts, our intent as a city is to fill that with a district process, whether that be an appointment or a special election or whatever the subsequent council would choose at that point, but it would be from that specific district. Any other feedback from council members? Council Member Robert.
I think that's pretty clear, thank you, but we haven't really spoke about it a lot. Just so the community is aware, the mayor's position would be an at-large position, so the whole city can vote on our mayor. So everyone's clear on that. So we really didn't speak about it a lot. But anyway, that's all. Thank you.
Great great clarification. Appreciate that. So Councilmember Rushing or Councilmember Miller?
No, I don't have anything really to mention at this point. Everything's very straightforward. I appreciate it. Thank you.
Very good. And next, I'll turn to Councilmember Miller.
Thank you. I was just going to say the same thing. No additional questions or comments from me.
Very good. So I think we have intent for our ordinance for some language to proceed with an unplanned vacancy of an at-large seat to be filled under the district process. Okay. Very good. Any other lingering questions that folks might have for the ordinance drafters?
So, can you hear me now, Mayor?
Yes, we can, Mr. Hale. Thank you. So,
my technology. Not sure what happened, but
no worries. So, in while you were reconnecting, we did have a conversation, and we've landed on the intent of the council is to proceed with an unplanned vacancy of an at-large seat to proceed under the district rules and district boundaries for refilling of that seat. So was there anything else you wanted to add to that discussion or anything else we need to add for the ordinance as that's going to be drafted?
No, that was consistent with Matt's discussion, the one that we had. So you confirmed that's council's direction. So no, I think that's all I need.
Okay, very good. Then going once, going twice. We are complete with our districts election system and our process. So thank you everyone for the path to get us here, the good conversation to have that. Dr. Phillips, thank you for your participation throughout this entire process. Staff, City Manager Bronson, Deputy City Manager Erickson, and everyone from the community that participated. Let us go forth and elect via districts. So, very good. So that will take us to item number six, which is our master fee schedule. It is an amendment to update our building permit fees. And I will invite public comments on this item as well. You can call in at 805-321-6639. And I will turn it over to Mr. Buckingham for some introductory comments prior to bringing in Mr. Terry Mattson from ClearSource, the consultant for this item. Mr. Buckingham.
Great. Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Good evening, Mayor and Council. Again, I just want to start with some brief background before handing this over to our consultant. The city has used contract building services rather than the in-house staff for many years, over a decade or so. And the consultant provides really two primary services, the building plan review, commonly referred to as plan check, and our building inspection services, people that are out in the field doing the actual inspections. That doesn't mean city staff doesn't do anything. We do all the administrative functions. Some examples of that are we route and track the plan reviews, we enter and issue permits, the fee calculations, managing inspections, and a lot of other things behind the scenes. Staffs previously informed the council that the city's building fees have not been updated in many years. And as a result of that, the city is not recovering the full cost of providing building services. Therefore, it's subsidized by the general fund. And Terry will talk to that a little bit more. In addition, it creates another problem, and that's that the city's current building consultant is paid below market rates. And they have indicated that they cannot continue to provide services indefinitely without adjusting the fee that the city pays them so that they can actually be whole, if you will. And then further, the current below market rates that we have hinder the city's ability to go out and hire new building consultants in the future. So to resolve these issues, staff did contract with ClearSource Financial Consulting, led by Terry Mattson, to provide an analysis of the city's current costs of providing those building services and drafting the updated fees that would provide the full cost recovery. Lastly, I'll just note that this building fee update does not include revisions to our development impact fees, which account for approximately 70% of the total cost associated for a new residence to be constructed in the city. So those will be updated separately, and that is on the schedule for early 2023. So with that, I will hand it over to Terry Mattson with ClearSource for a presentation.
Well, good evening, Mayor and members of the City Council. As mentioned, my name is Terry Mattson. I'm here with my colleague, David Schroeder. We're from ClearSource Financial Consulting, and our firm helps communities throughout the state identify and recover the cost of providing fee-related services. We're going to be sharing a presentation with you this evening that presents the results of the recently completed building permit fee study. I'm going to walk you briefly through the agenda. But I want to make sure to comment that I will not be long-winded. We will move quickly through this item so that we allow time for your feedback and allow you to move through the remainder of your agenda. Next slide, please. As an overview of what we'll be talking about for the next 10 to 15 minutes, we're just going to give you a brief background on fees in Grover Beach and fees in California in general, fundamentals of cost of service studies and fee setting, and then specific findings that are specific to Grover Beach for this study. And then finally, a lot of times City Council, when you're asked to make a decision, you say, thank you for this information, but can you help me understand if I say yes to this, what would my new fees look like as compared to the region and where do I stand today? And then ultimately, because these are fees, they're considered at the conclusion of a public hearing. So we'll conclude with a public hearing. Next slide, please. David, please go ahead.
Thanks, Terry. This evening, we're dealing with what are commonly referred to as user and regulatory fees. Unlike taxes, these are fees that are collected for when you're providing a discrete service or performing a discrete activity for an individual or business, rather than providing more of a broad community-wide service. We use tax dollars to fund activities like public safety, public works, park maintenance. Fees are used for when you're providing an individual or a service that where there's a directly identifiable benefit. Of an identifiable benefit to the fee payer. In this study, the study was limited to reviewing city building fees only. Some examples of the types of fees that we're talking about are fees for construction permit processing, plan checks, inspections. And as a reminder to council, again, in this study, we're not examining taxes, assessments, or utility rates. We're also not examining what are called impact fees, as Bruce mentioned. These are mitigation fees that are intended to offset the cost of infrastructure. The fees that we are examining are to offset the cost of direct services that you're already providing, so the majority of your residents and businesses won't be affected by what's being examined here. So if you want to do a remodel or new construction, things of that nature, that's what we're looking at.
Next, please. Okay, sure. We'll just walk briefly through some fundamentals of fee setting in California. You are like other municipalities where you use a fee schedule to recover the cost of direct services, but because these are fees and not taxes, we have some legal boundaries that we follow. And the primary concept is this idea of what we're trying to do is not make a profit. We're trying to recover the costs of providing specific services. And so when we establish fees, we first identify what does it actually cost us to provide a service. And then we use that cost to influence a fee amount. We don't want to charge a fee that exceeds our cost. But what's unique to fees is that we're looking at the full cost of service. So we're looking at all of our labor-related costs, salaries and benefits, all of our contractual costs, but also the support costs that allow us to provide these direct outward-facing services like finance support, human resource support, city management support. Just a little piece of those central services come down to allow for the outward-facing, the direct services to be provided to the community. And then also critical to remember is that because these are fees, they're intended to cover costs of providing these specific services. We don't want to layer in any non-fee related costs into fees. Next slide, please. The reason cities proactively manage these fees and do studies like this is just to make sure that we are following legal parameters that are fees aligned to our cost of service, that they don't exceed it. But also, it's a general fund purpose. As a council, you're constantly faced with decisions where there are almost an unlimited scenario for need, but there is finite resource. And so you have to prioritize how do I make best use of my available resources. And what communities have decided is that frequently they try and find a direct cost recovery, like in the form of a fee, when we're providing a direct service, so that we can use general tax dollars as much as possible to provide community-wide benefit. So that's the idea. And then finally, this concept that I think is really important, this final bullet, this idea of that as community members, as business owners, those kind of things, we have a service level expectation. We walk into City Hall and we expect to be greeted by someone. We submit application. We expect to have it reviewed in a timely manner, all those kind of things. We call for field inspection. We hope someone will show up. Charging fees that recover our costs of service help us continue to meet that service level expectation of the community. That's one of the main reasons that we want to proactively manage this, is to say we want to continue to collaborate in a positive manner with the community. Next slide, please. Because these are fees and not taxes, at the conclusion of this item, there will be a public hearing, but the city council ultimately adopts. It doesn't go out to a citywide vote or anything like that. It's adopted as long as we follow the parameters of the California Constitution and the California Government Code. Next slide, please. So just some terminology that is consistent amongst communities, but is sort of specific to fee studies. Over and over throughout the report you may have reviewed and throughout this presentation, we refer to these three concepts: cost of service, cost recovery, and subsidy. Cost of service is really that fully layered cost, all of the labor, all of the contractuals and services and supplies. Cost recovery for this discussion is how much of that cost is actually being recovered from fees. So if we say something cost us $300, but we only charge a fee of $150, we would say that's a 50% cost recovery. The city incurred costs of $300, it received $150 from the applicant and had to find the other $150 from some other city resource, which is typically the general fund. So that's what we're talking about when we say cost recovery. And then this concept of subsidy, for this discussion, it's the difference between what the applicant pays us and what it actually costs the city to provide the service. So we're saying the general fund, when I recover less than my cost of service, general fund tax dollars are subsidizing that service. Next slide, please. So cost of service can be expressed mathematically. We're really, because these are service-based fees, we can identify value of time. And so if we say, hey, we're worth $150 an hour and something takes us an hour to perform, we would say that cost of service is $150. If a different activity takes us 2 hours to perform, we would say the cost of service is $300. And so that's how we do that cost of service math. And that's our first foundational identifiers. What does it actually cost us to do something? And then that helps us identify cost recovery on the next slide. Cost recovery, once we know what it costs us, then the city council can use that information to make policy decisions about whether to recover up to that cost or something less for one reason or another. As an editorial comment, in case the council in case it matters to the council, what we see as consultants when we work for other communities is this idea for development-related fees. Typically, there is a very identifiable beneficiary for these services. So if I remodel my kitchen, I am directly benefiting from that remodel. If I add square footage, if I construct something new, I'm a direct recipient of service and a direct receiver of benefit. And so most communities target high levels of cost recovery from these development related fees. Next slide, please. This expresses this concept of subsidy and cost recovery. Our full cost of service represents our legal ceiling. We don't want to charge more than it costs us to provide this service. Once we go there, now we've moved into the realm of taxation, and taxation is approved by different legal thresholds, right? So fees are approved by the council, but we want to make sure that our fees don't exceed our cost of service. The difference between our cost of service and what we're collecting from fees would be our city subsidy. Next slide, please. So generally, specific to Grover Beach, what we find is that for your building permit fees, which is what we studied as part of this analysis, you do recover less than your full cost of service. This isn't a surprise because it has been some time since fees were most recently updated. We do believe that fees could be adjusted without positioning you as a regional outlier. And so our recommendation is to move fees generally towards full cost recovery. If you did that, you would eliminate the current subsidy that's being provided, that current under recovery. What we show today is an under recovery in the neighborhood of $86,000. And the adjusted fees would seek to eliminate that under recovery. Next slide, please. One more thing to say on that idea of eliminating the under recovery. These are costs that you're incurring today. So it's for services you're providing now. It's not building in an enhanced level of service. It's not saying we'll have two more field inspectors or something like that. It's what we believe to maintain the current service level, you would need to adjust fees. If you do adjust fees, we've also recommended some fee restructuring. We think the restructuring would enhance fee schedule clarity, help applicants estimate their fees, align fees to construction type and project complexity, so fees would scale. Minor project, lower fee, more significant project, higher fee. And ultimately, the idea here is that that recalibration of fees and enhanced recovery will help us to continue to meet the service level expectations of the community. Thank you.
Thanks, Terry.
Thanks, Terry.
Now that we've covered fundamentals and the study findings, we want to consider how we compare to the region. So we're happy to provide that information in the next few slides. But before we do that, we want to talk through some of the drawbacks and benefits of that approach. It's important to keep in mind when looking at the comparisons to other agencies that you may not be comparing apples to apples exactly. And when looking at other agencies, we may also, those agencies may also not have examined their fees for several years. Other agencies also may target different cost recovery levels than what you're seeking to recover. Or you may also have fees with similar naming conventions, but that provide slightly different levels of services. So a plan check in one city may include, you know, two or three different activities, whereas in Grover Beach, it may include three or four or possibly, you know, something slightly less or slightly different. There's also some benefits, as Terry mentioned, to doing these comparisons, like seeing where you are, where you could be in relation to the rest of the region. Does my number align with the region? Are we in the upper range or the lower range? Can I explain why if my number doesn't align exactly align with the rest of the region? Remember, our goal is estimated and reasonable costs. Those are our legal requirements. So it may cost us X amount of dollars to provide that service, but is the amount I'm looking to collect for that service reasonable? So to help council and staff figure out how we want to move forward, we try to compare permits that are most likely to walk in the door. These are your high volume permits requested or permits that are easily comparable from agency to agency. And then what we try to do is say that today this is where Grover Beach falls in that regional fee spectrum if we're comparing ourselves to. And if fees were adopted tomorrow, where you'd be positioned when comparing yourself to your neighbors. So the first fee that we have here for comparison is for water heater changeout. We can see here that currently Grover Beach is positioned towards the lower end of the fee spectrum. If updated fees are adopted, we'd be positioning you a little bit more towards the mid-range. And you'll notice this is a pretty consistent pattern among the fees we've chosen to show you. Next, we'll look at residential re-roof. Again, currently Grover Beach is towards the lower end of the spectrum on that. Again, if fees are adopted, you'd be positioned more towards that mid-range of the spectrum. The next fee we'll take a look at here is for construction of a new single-family residence, 2,000 square feet. Same pattern here. Grover Beach is currently towards the lower end of the spectrum. Adjusting fees would move you or position you more towards that mid-range. And then the last fee that we'll look at in this presentation is for a 500 square foot addition. Again, currently we're at towards the bottom end of the spectrum there. We think we could have you positioned somewhere in the mid range based on what it costs you to provide that service. So what we're asking City Council to do here today is to conduct a public hearing, and at the conclusion of that hearing to determine whether to adopt the updated schedule of fees. If adopted, updated fees could go into effect on May 1 of this year, May 1st of this year. Thank you, Mayor and Council. This concludes our presentation. We're available for any questions or feedback you may have.
Very good. Thank you, gentlemen, for that presentation. So as we bring it back to the council for questions, I will open up to the public as part of the public hearing in just a moment. But I do invite folks to call in at 805-321-6639 if they want to provide public comment on this item. So let me turn to council members first and see if anyone has any questions for either Mr. Mattson, Mr. Schroeder, or Mr. Buckingham. So go ahead and unmute yourself if you do, or raise your hand. See, I've lost Council Member Bright's visual, so I'm not sure if she has her hand raised. But actually, in the interim, let me ask a brief question. So, just to confirm, during the presentation, you had mentioned that it is a City Council resolution for changing of these fees. And so just to get it on the record to make sure this is not a Prop 218 style of fee request. And so no Prop 218 vote is necessary to go out to the community. I saw some shaking heads, but if someone could just confirm that for me, that'd be awesome.
We confirm
that'd be
correct, it. Thank you, Mayor.
Prop 218 only applies to fees that are an incident of property ownership. These are not. These are more regulatory processing. I think as Bruce articulated, user type fees.
Okay. Very good. Appreciate that. So that was my one confirming question. And then so let me see if other members of the council have questions. Looking, not seeing anyone unmute themselves, I will go ahead and open our public hearing and invite questions from the public by calling in at 805-321-6639. And I'll turn to our city clerk to see if there's anyone on the line to speak on this item.
No, we have no one online.
Okay, very good. Thank you for that. I will go ahead and close our public hearing on this item, bring it back to the council for discussion. And let me just first turn. Okay, I do see Mayor Pro Tem Bright. Okay, so her visual is just not here for the moment. But let me see if there's other comments or someone's ready to make a motion on this item. Okay, we're definitely a talkative bunch this evening. Actually, I saw Councilmember Miller go ahead and you unmuted yourself. Or you raised your hand, rather.
Right. Thank you, Mary Lee. So I think an alignment of fees to construction types and project complexity makes sense and could benefit those simpler projects by lowering fees for those projects. So I think I am in support of a fee structure that would allow us to, excuse me, offset any cost of service. So I'm for it.
Very good. I'll turn to, I think I saw Mayor Pro Tem Bright had her hand raised, and then I'll go to Councilmember Rushing.
Thank you, Mayor. Yes, I'd like to agree with my colleague, Councilmember Miller. Also, I do believe that it is incredibly important that the general fund not subsidize, or that we end the subsidy of these fees. I also appreciate how it can scale to projects and the ability for those who might be interested in improving their property or whatever to estimate the fees more closely. So I too am in support of the master fee schedule update. Thank you.
You're good. Thank you for those comments. Next, I'll turn to Councilmember Rushing.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I too am in support of this update as well. Thank you very much. To Mayor Pro Tem Bright's point as well, I was struck by some of the comparisons that our consultants were kind enough to bring us today, showing where Grover Beach currently stands in terms of their fee schedules, and while. I think it's always fantastic that Grover Beach is encouraging and makes it at all possible whenever for people to make additions and make changes at the most affordable rate possible. To the pro tem's point, it certainly isn't the City of Grover Beach's position to subsidize these. So anything that we can do at this point to make sure that the city is recouping their costs in this process and moving forward while keeping our fees in line with our community is greatly appreciated. Thank you.
Very good. I'll turn to Councilmember Robert.
Thank you, Mayor. Were you looking for comments or were you looking for a motion?
So at the moment, we are at comments waiting for a motion. So whichever way you would like to proceed.
Yeah, I thought I heard you ask for a motion. I'd like to make a motion that we adopt the resolution to amend the master fee schedule.
I'll second that.
Very good. We have a motion and a second. And just for clarification, that would be effective as of May 1st of this year, per the request, correct?
Yes.
Very good. So then with that, I will turn to our city clerk for a roll call, please.
Councilmember Robert.
Yes.
Councilmember Rushing.
Yes.
Councilmember Miller.
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Bright.
Yes.
Mayor Lee.
Yes. Very good. So we do have an adopted master fee schedule amendment to update our building permit fees. Thank you, gentlemen, for your work on this item. Mr. Buckingham, is there any other action or any other input we need on this item before we proceed to our next agenda item?
No, sir. Thank you very much.
Thank you all. Good evening.
Thank you, everyone. Appreciate that. So that will conclude work on item number 6, and that does take us to item number 7, which is our fiscal year 21-22 mid-year budget review and general fund forecast. Let me turn to our administrative services director, Ms. Purcell, for the presentation.
Good evening, Mayor Lee and council members. Tonight, it's my pleasure. I'm going to be highlighting three different areas: the fiscal year 21-22 mid-year review, the ARPA allocation, and the five-year general fund financial forecast. So we'll start with the general fund summary, budget versus what we're projecting for year-end. Council adopted a fiscal year 22 budget of $19.2 million with an annual surplus of $43,000. And now we're looking at the projected year-end estimated $590,000, which is about $547,000 higher than what we had budgeted. So let's look at the breakdown between revenues and expenditures to see what happened. We look at the city's top five revenues, which make up over 85% of the total general fund revenue. And I want to highlight two areas, specifically cannabis tax, because normally we're used to seeing budget versus projected as an increase. I mean, this is the first year we've seen this. So we're estimating it to be $648,000 lower than what we budgeted. And this is really based on revenues received through the second quarter. But TOT is here to save the day. We're estimating that we're going to be about $320,000 higher. And this is really due to our permitted short-term rentals that are coming in higher than we projected, along with an increase in travel and tourism. Next, we'll look at the general fund expenditures. They're projected to end the year under budget by $864,000. And this is mainly due to CIP, where approximately $864,000 is estimated to be savings by including the $634,000 in lower cost for South Oak Park Boulevard street repair project and skate park renovation project, and another $230,000 in savings for capital projects that will be delayed this year. So quite a bit of savings in CIP. I also want to highlight the Enterprise Fund water revenues. I want to note they're down $200,000 or 3% when we compare this to the prior year. And we're looking at this as due to a decrease in consumption or the water conservation that's going on right now, along with the tiered rate structure that we that was approved last year and was implemented July 1st. So customers basically pay lower rates when they're using less water. So these revenues will be monitored closely to follow the trends, and we'll be reporting back to you in the third quarter for any potential funding impacts. The expenditures, this kind of follows the historical trends. They're at 72%, and this is really due to 81% is expended already for supplies and services, and these are due to annual payments that are made in the first 6 months, mainly the Lopez water contract and the debt service payment that we have. And we also have 94 expended for CIP projects that are nearing completion. And that's really the 2- and 4-inch water main upgrade that is being funded by CDBG grant. Wastewater includes the rate increase that was implemented July 1st, and we are on track to meet budget for revenue. The expenditure side is only at 26%, but that's really mainly due to 3% being expended for CIP projects that haven't started. Next, during the mid-year review, we give the departments an opportunity to identify any unforeseen needs that have become known. These are the following general fund appropriation requests. They total about $145,000, and they're mainly MPD. I'll just highlight those two. We have $82,000 that is being requested to replace community video cameras and software, and another $34,500 for body-worn cameras and software. That is 50% of the cost. The other 50% will be covered through the COPS grant fund. So looking at the general fund summary that I highlighted in the first slide showing that annual surplus of $590,000, if we apply the mid-year request, that brings us down to a revised annual surplus of $445,000. We also have some carryovers from fiscal year 21, and those are really represent some of the appropriations that weren't expended until fiscal year 22, so we carry them over. And this just brings us back to our percent of operating expenditures of about 36%, which is still way well over the 25% council goal. ARPA allocation, that's the American Rescue Plan Act. This year we received $1.6 million. We'll receive another $1.6 million next year for a total of $3.2 million, which is based off of our population. We've spent about $175,000 through December 31st. We have five buckets I'd like to go over. The first one is our biggest. That's for homeless services and facilities. We have about $800,000 allocated for the shelter and services. We've spent about $75,000. And next, we have the nonprofit assistance, where we have $100,000 allocated to the nonprofit grants and another $100,000 that is allocated to the childcare assistance. So we've spent about $25,000 there. And then we have the low-income utility assistance, where we provide discounts to qualified customers. We've spent about $13,000, and I wanted to note that in the last 2 years, we've had that being paid through the general fund. So this year, we're allocating ARPA money to pay for that assistance. And then we have the business assistance, where we have $275,000, which includes the Buy Local program, additional business assistance, co-work space, and the economic development contract with the South Coast Chamber of Commerce. So we spent about $61,000 for that. And then lastly, we have sewer projects. We have $100,000 going towards the lift station and another $200,000 going for the upgrade sewer capacity projects. So moving to our five-year general fund forecast. Each year, the city updates its five-year general fund forecast, and benefits for this forecast include: it's a planning tool for building a financially resilient government. It encourages involvement for open communication and transparency. It provides context for goal setting and the budget process. And then finally, it improves long-term financial sustainability. Top forecast drivers this year, I really want to highlight the economic trends and outlook. If you see that animation, it's really kind of how I feel right now. The forecast shows snow and they're walking out to a sunny day. So I'll talk a lot about the economic trends, city top five revenues, the debt service, and finally the capital improvement plan. So here, COVID-19, I'm sure we're all really getting tired of hearing about this in the headlines. But according to the UCLA Anderson's economic forecast in December of 2021, the big story was what will happen with the continued spread of COVID-19, particularly the Omicron variant. And we know that cases surged in January of 22. Although cases are now decreasing and the indoor mask mandate has been lifted. But due to this variant, the December forecast projected that the first quarter of 2022 would be slower. So in general, this is just a very unique time, and the pandemic is unlike anything that the city has ever experienced. So there's still a level of uncertainty, which makes it really tough when projecting year-end estimates, and really hard when we're looking out 5 years. We also have supply chain issues. So I don't know if any of you had noted, and I think this was back in December, these are the ports in LA where they had record-breaking imports, and it made it really difficult to move the containers fast enough through to the retailers, which really is what's driving up the prices. But the reports are now saying it's starting to ease, and the projection is that we will get back to normal by the end of 2022 and into 2023. We also have labor shortages. So I don't know if you've been into restaurants or stores where you see these signs that say, sorry, we're short staffed. Please be patient with us. But the Bureau of Labor Statistics have reported that the big driver, this is a national chart here, 5.3 million of the people have not returned. It's mostly women because they're caring for children, because we know that we have a daycare issue right now. Some of them are homeschooling their children, and they haven't returned to work. 1.5 million are not looking because of the pandemic. 3.2 million are worried about getting or spreading the virus. And then another 1.7 million are receiving unemployment benefits. And the other area that you don't see here is there's a lot of people that are retiring as well. But looking at the unemployment rate, SLO County is in a much better position than the state. We're coming in at the sixth lowest rate among California's 58 counties. If you look at that December 21 number, the blue bar, 7.7% represents California, and the 3.5% unemployment rate represents SLO County. So we're in a much better position compared to California overall. And the forecast is that that number will continue to go down as people start returning to the workforce. We also have an inflation problem. The forecast anticipates high but slowing inflation. Quarter four of last year, we had almost a 7% inflation rate. Oil prices are a big indicator of inflation, and they're going to need to come down. But now we've got the Ukraine-Russia issue. But to combat inflation, another factor is that the Feds are reporting that they're going to raise interest rates starting in March. Now, when I went to this forecast in December, it was noted it was going to be raised three times. And now I've just recently came back from a conference where now the report is they really feel they have to get in control of inflation. So it might be six times that they raise the rates. And this is all starting in March. So this is something that we're really going to watch carefully. But one factor that's encouraging is that the consumers are delaying purchases of items such as cars and furniture where there's a supply shortage. And so you can't get it until 6 months later. So why buy it now? So this delay in spending will also help drive the inflation rate down as the supply constraints are lifted and the higher prices come down. Another area, big area, due to the shortage in the supply of housing, we know that it's a seller's market. And the supply shortage is driving up housing prices, which are up 17% over the past year. And this is actually the highest increase since 2006. So the median home price in Grover Beach is over $700,000 now. I think when I reported to you last year at the same time, the median home price was around $600,000. So it's gone up quite a bit. The latest sales tax forecast, this is by DL, which are sales tax consultants. Their January 2022 California forecast showed that statewide sales tax revenue was up 18%, and on the Central Coast, we're up 17%. There's three major groups that are showing a rebound. Autos and transportation are up 16%, and this is really due to new car prices, which are up 10%, and used car prices are up 26%. So it's very expensive to buy a car now. Fuel and service stations, as you know, they're up 54%. The price of gas is almost $5 per gallon right now. So that's a big problem, but it's helping us in our sales tax. Restaurants and hotels are also at 48% as more people are going out to eat, more people are traveling. But the area of the food and drug group has flattened. They're only up 8%, and that does include that cannabis area that we're talking about. We're kind of seeing cannabis plateau this year back to pre-pandemic levels, and grocery stores have also flattened. That's because people are eating out more instead of buying groceries and staying at home. So in summary, the economic forecast, the current environment is uncertain and volatile. It's quite unique right now, and it's hard to predict. It's mainly due to COVID, the supply and labor shortages, and inflation. But we are moving towards a normal as COVID cases come down, inflation and unemployment start to stabilize. But we do need to go forward with cautious optimism, because we know one global event, such as this new Ukraine-Russia crisis or another variant, could change everything. Going to the top five general revenues, I just wanted to highlight that sales tax is now our number one general fund revenue, and that's because of the measure F20 that was passed last year. It's followed closely by property tax, which used to be number one. Cannabis tax is at 13%, franchise fees at 3%, and TOT at 2%. Here's some of the assumptions. Sales tax, we're seeing that we're down about 3%, and that's really due to the cannabis. There's a correlation. When cannabis tax revenues go up, so do our sales tax revenues. So, but our forecast from our sales tax consultant is that we will be seeing good increases between 4 and 5% in this five-year forecast. Property tax, the assessed valuation, you can see in this chart that it just keeps going up, 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 and that's what the home sales are really helping us. These numbers come from the county tax assessor's office. We're projecting 4% increases for the next 3 years, followed by 3% increases for the following 3 years. And then cannabis tax, we did budget $2.4 million. As I've reported, we are adjusting that down to $1.8 million because we are seeing that the tax revenue is down this year when compared to last year, our pandemic year. We had a really good year, but we are forecasting a 2% increase for the next 5 years based on that $1.8 million number. Franchise fees, we did bring that down $100,000. We had that international fiber optic cable that was built. We thought we were going to bring in $100,000 from that this year, but that's been delayed. So we did back out that number, but that is included in the five-year forecast. We've added $100,000 each year. And then finally, TOT, our current year, we did budget $500,000. Now we're seeing an increase. So we are looking at $800,000 for fiscal year 22. We did bump that down to $750,000 because I wanted to note the part of the increase this year was due to we did recognize that some of the new permitted short-term rentals weren't paying their TOT tax. So we made a collection attempt. We were able to collect that money, get them up to date, and we are seeing about $95,000 of the current year revenue is from short-term rentals in prior years that hadn't paid. So for the forecast is a 3% increase for the following 4 years after 2023. We also look at debt service. Our debt service ratio is 1.6%, which is very healthy. Anything below 10% is good. So we're doing really well in having low debt. And then finally, our capital improvement plan. This was baked into the five-year forecast. So we were looking at $2.3 million to $2.6 million for the next 5 years. And this follows our five-year CIP plan. So overall, our five-year general fund forecast summary looks very good. I did want to note fiscal year 23 has been revised. It's been revised because we brought the cannabis revenues down, but we also looked at that inflationary factor. So we also increased our costs a little bit to get to about 3.5%. We wanted to make sure that we were able to cover our costs. So that annual surplus, when it was adopted, was about $488,000. So we've brought it down to under $100,000. And that could change, like we know with all these forecasts, just depending on how everything goes. But the following 4 years after that look very good. We've got a very healthy reserve at 38% in fiscal year 23. And you can see that it just continues to go up. But I do want to mention, I think it's very important to keep our reserve at a healthy percent just because of all these uncertain, unforeseen circumstances that we're going through right now. I think it's prudent for us to make sure that we have a little cushion there. So in summary, our cannabis tax revenues are sluggish, but this is offset by TOT increases that are showing more activity than projected. Our short-term issues with inflation, labor and supply shortages should be corrected by fiscal year 23. Our five-year general fund forecast shows strong financial position, as you saw with our reserve goals over 25% of operating costs each year. There is a degree of uncertainty in the cannabis industry, so we want to be cautious and we want to continue to recommend one-time uses in general for additional general revenues. And also, there's a degree of uncertainty in the overall economic environment. It shows continued need for closely monitoring the situation, and it's very important that I report to you to council on a quarterly basis. So the recommendation is to receive the information on the fiscal year 21-22 mid-year budget review, including the city's ARPA allocation and the updated general fund financial forecast, and to provide input and direction to staff. We have some future budget agenda items I wanted to highlight that include the council goal setting workshop on March 7th, the draft CIP on March 28th, and then finally the fiscal year 22-23 budget update on April 25th. So with that, I'm here for any questions or comments.
Very good. Thank you for that presentation, Ms. Purcell. Always good to see the graphics and mostly the numbers as we are moving forward in this fiscal year. So as it comes back to us for questions, I'm going to invite the public to call in at 805-321-6639. But first, I'll turn to my colleagues and see if there's any members of the council that have questions for Ms. Purcell. Go ahead and unmute yourself or raise your hand. Mayor Pro Tem Bright.
Thank you. Yes, well, first of all, thank you for the presentation. It was very concise and very easy to understand, so I appreciate that greatly. So my first question is on page 4, and it's regarding the water fund. 2021-22, the salary and benefits, there was an increase of 18.5% over the second quarter in 21-22, and I was just wondering if you could talk about that just a little bit, help me understand that.
You know what, I would have to look at it probably a little more closely. Lot of that has to do with some of our increases that we had during the year, but I'll go back and look, and I'll get back to you on what the increases were, the big variances.
Okay, perhaps, thank you. I should have gotten that to you before.
That's okay.
But
that's okay. I should have an answer for you. Thank you.
And I do see Mr. Bronson has unmuted himself, so perhaps you wanted to add something to that conversation, sir?
No, other than then we will provide that information back to you after the meeting.
Okay.
Thank you. I appreciate that. So then this is on page 6, and it is in reference to the body cam expense, which I am completely in support of. I just don't, I don't understand under the wastewater fund when it says COPS, is that certificate of participation or is it an actual COPS grant? And I don't understand how come it's under You probably can't do that for me now either. I should, but maybe you can.
Peter's answer on that, but that is a separate fund, and that's I'm bad with the acronyms. I know it used to be the SLESF fund, and it through AB 109. So I'm going to turn that over to Chief Peters to give you what that acronym stands for. I'm not. I usually have it on the top of my head, and I don't have it right now. But
so, Chief, if you would enlighten us, please, on what COPS stands for.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Mayor and Mayor Pro Tem Bright. It's actually called the Supplemental Law Enforcement Services Fund. And so that's a kind of a long acronym. But they shortened it to basically COPS because each city gets a stipend from the state from that account. So we're helping to offset the cost for those body cameras, the new body cameras, with utilizing those grant funds.
Okay. Thank you. I appreciate that. I thought that might have been it, but I just wasn't sure.
Mayor Pro Tem, before we leave that, just to clarify, perhaps Ms. Purcell, on page six, the wastewater fund has an allocation of $15,000, correct? So which is different than the COPS funds.
That's correct.
Is that correct?
That's
so I just want to make sure.
Yes.
Okay. So there is the body cams are not being funded out of the wastewater fund, is that?
No, they're being funded out of the general fund and the COPS fund that we just talked about.
Okay.
Now I see that. I didn't see it at the time. So thank you, Mayor, and everyone for helping me along. Takes a village. Then my last question is page 8 and 9. And it's regarding the $75,000 business assistance for exterior improvements in signage. How would businesses apply for those funds? Do we know yet?
I'll go ahead and take this one, Mayor Pro Tem. This is, as staff believes, the next iteration of our business grant program, less open as the program was in 2020, 2021, more focused on exterior improvements. In short, we have not put this together yet. We would intend to put an outreach effort together this spring, make it available to businesses, work with the Chamber of Commerce very closely, look at perhaps going up a little bit higher than the grant amount previously, maybe up to $10,000, and then just try to conduct a targeted effort this spring. And certainly we would blanket our communication channels to get the word out.
Very good. Thank you so much. I appreciate the information.
Very good. Thank you for those questions, Mayor Pro Tem. Let me turn to other council members, see if anyone has particular specific questions. Seeing no one unmute themselves, I did just have one question, and I know the city manager has addressed this in the past, but I just want to make sure more of a clarifying comment is from an ARPA, American Rescue Plan Act funding, we do have a specification or requirement to spend a certain amount of funds before we get the next level of funds. And so I just want to confirm that even though we've only spent a relatively small portion of that, we are on track to be able to spend the necessary funds prior to the allocation of our next funding request. Is that a fair statement?
I'll let Ms. Purcell address that, but in general, yes, that's a fair statement.
Yes, and you are correct. We are supposed to spend 80% of that, and I think we're well aware of that. We've been working with staff, and I think we should be able to meet those requirements.
Okay, very good. So I'm sure that will become a hot topic as we get closer, and looking forward to being able to spend those funds efficiently. Very good. Not seeing any other questions by unmuted microphone, I'll go ahead and turn to our city clerk and invite folks to call in at 805-321-6639, and I'll see if there's anyone on the line for public comment on this item.
No, we have no one on the line.
Very good. We'll go ahead and close public comment on this item and bring it back to the council for comments and or direction. I think our requested direction tonight from staff is just a concurrence on the mid-year appropriations, and then potentially any adjustments, questions, or comments on the ARPA allocation. Is that correct, Mr. Bronson?
That is correct. This is mainly provided to you for your information and financial context in the interest of transparency and reporting, but staff is seeking council concurrence with a list of mid-year budget appropriations. We would bring those back to you for formal action on March 14th, and then any other input the council may have on the items before you.
Very good. Thank you for that. I'll turn to Councilmember Robert.
Thank you. Thank you, Mayor. And thank you, Ms. Parcell. That was very, very good report. I read it over. Very, very informative, and I really appreciate your information there. Look forward to spending the ARPA funds or allocating the ARPA funds to the nonprofits coming up. Very excited about that to help that sector and the future ARPA funds. We got to get on the ball and spend that money to get more. So look forward to that. And the budget looks good. It was a little disappointing in some of the areas, but the TOT looks good, and like that, it's going up real well. So thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Very good. Anyone else have comments or ready to provide direction? Councilmember Rushing.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I just wanted to echo just briefly Councilmember Roberts' sentiments. Ms. Purcell, that was a great presentation. Literally every time I had a question, you answered it on the next slide. Okay. So thank you for that. In terms of the cannabis taxes and the drop that we've seen year over year, I know that it's an expected element. So I appreciate you taking into account the fact that we are not in 2020 and the first part of 2021 at this point. And moving forward, we're essentially creating a new baseline for what it is that we're looking for from our cannabis taxation and looking forward in the foreseeable future to that 2% increase sounds certainly doable. So I appreciate your time. Thank you very much.
Very good. Next, I'll turn to Councilmember Miller.
Thank you, Mayor. So with the continuing changes relating to the pandemic and world events, I am in agreement with the need to maintain a healthy reserve as a contingency for unplanned need. I also concur with the budget appropriations as outlined. Thank you for the comprehensive report and keeping the council informed. Now, the follow-up to Councilmember Rushing's comment about cannabis baseline. I think I know the answer to this, but I just want to make sure that we mention it for the public. We're establishing a new baseline, but we also anticipate that going forward, cannabis revenue will grow again. Is that correct?
I think that's a good statement. I mean, we're looking at the consumption lounges, we're looking at new businesses coming on board, but it's really hard right now to predict because we don't have that many years where we don't have a lot of historical data. But we feel positive. We feel like the trend will continue to, we'll see increases. But at this point, we want to be very cautious at how what we predict. And it's the same with TOT. We know that there's probably going to be additional revenues there as the construction starts on these new hotels, but we don't want to include it just yet. We want to be cautious. We don't want to increase or include anything that we aren't 100% sure about. So we do, especially in these times, we need to be very conservative, and we need to really wait until we see what's happening. And that's why, as I stated, it's so important that we come to you every quarter and report in these budget cycles that we have. I mean, it's just really, we just need to keep the communication going because I heard about cannabis in one of my conferences where it's really a statewide problem right now. And they're seeing statewide, they're seeing cannabis tax revenues plateauing, and there's many reasons for it. So I don't think we're the only one that's experiencing this right now, but we are being very cautious, and our numbers, as disappointing as it might be, it really, if you kind of look at the the chart, you kind of see us just going back to pre-pandemic levels. And they're saying that during the pandemic, a lot of people were at home. Maybe they were bored. Maybe they were anxious. There were a lot of reasons why those revenues went up. But, you know, there's a lot of other factors. There's new businesses that are coming on board in the neighboring cities. There's this illegal market that we're still watching and we realize is a problem. So there's just a lot of stuff going on in that area. And it is, it's really hard to predict what's going to happen next. But we are, you know, we want to make sure that we note that we are seeing this decrease this year.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. I think it's wise to be conservative.
Very good. Next, I'll turn to Mayor Pro Tem Bright.
Thank you. Basically, I'd just like to, first of all, say that I do support the budget appropriations. I think that they're timely and necessary. I also wanted to relay the appreciation for the low-income utility assistance. I live in a senior neighborhood, and I know that there are a number of seniors who greatly appreciate that little bit of assistance, and it really helps when you're on a limited income. So it's important and appreciated. The debt ratio, 1.6, that's unbelievable. I'm just so, anyway, that's marvelous, absolutely marvelous. Many people who don't care or wouldn't know, but it is fabulous. And so I really appreciate your caution there. And then lastly, regarding the cannabis taxes, the reason why we haven't, as a council, expended those funds on long-term projects and that sort of thing is exactly for this reason. We were advised by staff, and I know that we all understand that it is a volatile industry. The income is up and down, and there are many facets that can change how that income is comes in. So I too support what my colleagues have said already, I really do appreciate the caution and the way that we go forward expending those funds. So thank you very much. I appreciate it.
You're welcome.
Very good. Thank you for everyone for those comments. And I'll just add just a couple of my own just to concur with my colleagues, but then also to kind of represent that I think staff has done an admirable job in balancing the caution necessary with our revenue streams with the action that we as a council as well as the community have come to expect from the actions that we take in order to provide and enhance our community throughout the course of our fiscal year and to make sure that we have the services and cover the needs of our community. So realizing that Senator Laird is actually in the process of introducing some, shall we say, cannabis adjustment rules, for lack of a better term, in an effort to bring the state into a little bit more consistency or at least conformance with its own regulations. Hopefully that industry will get back to some semblance of stability when it comes to revenues, and we'll start to address the illegal market that is continuing to flourish on there. So, but I am in concurrence with staff's recommendation with the mid-year appropriations, but perhaps before we kind of do a formal direction there, with respect to ARPA, I'm in concurrence with what staff has projected. And realizing we had a public commenter earlier that did request perhaps a modification or altering of our ARPA discussion. I'm not currently in favor of modifying that, but I want to make sure that other council members, if they wanted to weigh in on that, I think we have done an approach where we support and augment the funding of our local nonprofits to provide the type of assistance and service outreach that the gentleman was speaking of in the public comment. And so I think we have, as a council and as a community, have addressed the ARPA funding in the way that that is most beneficial for our community, our businesses, as well as those that are in needs of service, whether they be unhoused or at risk of becoming unhoused. And so I just wanted to express that as well and see if there's other members of the council that wanted to weigh in on that portion of the conversation. So Mayor Pro Tem Bright, I see that your hand is raised, but I'm not sure if that's for this particular item or for your previous comments.
It is for this item, and I really appreciate the opportunity to have a bit of discussion about this. This is an issue. If you're talking about the public commenter regarding seniors and their ability to qualify for the rental amounts.
I was speaking about the gentleman who called in about cleaning up of Ramona and how we I think his request was to start a program address I forget how he put it, but to basically give money to the unhoused to address right. their situation, where I think more beneficial from my compassion and order thought process was to continue working with our nonprofits and our other service organizations to do that. So, I didn't mean to kind of override your thought process though.
No, not at all. I agree with you on that aspect. I just did want to maybe give a little more information regarding the issue with there are organizations that do assist Five Cities Homeless and many others with folks who are having difficulty relocating out of a home that for whatever reason they've lost their housing or are shortly to lose their housing. And there's an income gap there. So with Five Cities Homeless Coalition, I'm not sure. I think it's around, there's like a $20,000 income limit, as opposed to what Ms. Reiser was discussing, and that is seniors who have a decent income, but they're unable to qualify for the rental amount because it's three times the amount. So it's not that they don't try these other organizations, but there's this gap there where I think people are kind of being left behind. Anyway, so hopefully that made sense, and thank you for the opportunity.
Certainly, and perhaps before I chime in, I'll turn to Councilmember Robert for him to continue the discussion.
I have two discussions going on here. In regards to your discussion, Mayor, with the people at Ramona Park, I kind of got the impression that he was saying we came in and threw everybody out, and that wasn't the case at all. So the general public knows, and this gentleman knows, that we had staff available there. The Homeless Coalition was there to help, or the High Five Cities Homeless Coalition was there to help these people temporarily. We've taken their stuff to store it. Most people took their stuff with them. They understood what was going on, and they appreciate the help that we gave them in regards to temporarily moving them out of there so we can get the place cleaned up. It was that gazebo was falling apart. We're concerned about the safety, not only the people of the park, but the homeless as well. A lot of them, as you know, camp there. And it's also not true that the residents aren't concerned about the homeless that live there. They are concerned about it. We get a lot of people telling us that. And the police come there not to harass them. They come there because the general public is called. Someone's called and said that this is going on. And a lot of times, and this is not all of them, but a lot of times it's because they're drunk or someone's disorderly and they're trying to control the situations. I've been there several times when the police have been there, and they've always been respectful and taking care of the situation very professionally. So we're doing what we can. We understand the situation. As many people know, it's not just our city. This is all across the country, really, not just California. It's getting worse and worse, and we're trying to do what we can do, and we're spending money doing it, and the whole country is in a bad situation in that regard, and so we're doing what we can, and we're not trying to throw people out in the cold, as some people make it seem like we are, and that's not true. So thank you for everyone involved, Police Chief Peter, and everyone that goes down there and helps the people. That's very, very compassionate. Thank you.
Appreciate those comments. So before I turn to Councilmember Miller, I just want to make sure that I think this is a good conversation, but it is generally supposed to be on our mid-year budget item. And so I will, again, turn to Councilmember Miller for some comments, but then also to remind folks that we are going to have a council goals session next Monday night. And I think this is that'll be a good spot to kind of continue that conversation and perhaps provide any thoughts to staff as to if there might be a new program to implement. So Councilmember Miller.
Thank you, Mayor. So a majority of our ARPA funds, 800,000 of it, is going towards housing and homelessness. So I think that's important for folks to recognize. I don't see a need to reallocate funds or make any adjustments at this point. As far as starting a new program to assist the unhoused through the city, I know we have a lot of talented staff, but we don't have the expertise that's required to deal with mental illness or addiction or any other issues that are experienced through our homeless population. I think the best thing we can do is provide the financial support to those who do specialize in providing those services. The Five Cities Homeless Coalition is one. There are other services out there, but I think that's a better use of our funds. Thank you.
Very good. Appreciate those comments from all of my colleagues. And with that, let's go ahead and bring it back for, I think I've heard consensus on the request from staff for the mid-year budget review and allocations, and the update on the ARPA allocations and general fund forecast. So just to kind of close the loop on this, if someone wants to make a motion for that, we'll kind of proceed towards closure of this item.
Okay, I will make that motion.
I'll second that.
We have a motion by Mayor Pro Tem Bright and a second by Councilmember Rushing to approve staff's recommendation. So, City Clerk, roll call, please.
Mayor Pro Tem Bright?
Yes.
Councilmember Rushing?
Yes.
Councilmember Miller?
Yes.
Councilmember Robert?
Yes.
Mayor Lee?
Yes. Very good. Thank you, everyone, for that discussion. I know we perhaps, as we have a desire to do, not a desire, but the word escapes me, but we tend to wear our hearts on our sleeve and make sure that we want to include the discussion amongst the funding and the reserves and the revenue. So before we leave this item, let me turn to either Ms. Purcell or Mr. Bronson and see if there's any other action that you need from us or direction on this item this evening. Very good. I see two shaking heads in the negative. So I will close work on that item and take us back to our second public communication, where I'll invite folks to call in at 805-321-6639, and I'll turn to our city clerk and see if there's anyone on the line for our second round of public communication tonight.
No, we have no one on the line.
Let me go ahead and close public comment, bring it back to the council for our council committee reports, and let me turn to our Mayor Pro Tem first for any committee reports on her part.
Thank you. Well, these are actually committee reports that were saved from last meeting. First of all, the Air Pollution Control District, there was a 2020 annual air quality report, and a few things that were really quite significant is the PM10 or particulate matter 10. The 24-hour California standard was exceeded on 79 days versus 54 days for the previous year. And the PM2.5, the federal and state standards were exceeded on 23 days versus none the year prior. So particulate matter is matter with an aerodynamic diameter that's smaller than 10 or 2.5 microns, just in case you're interested in that. And most exceedances were measured at the sites in Paso and Atascadero, and it was due to fire smoke and all the wildfires that we had. Regarding the Oceano Dunes State Vehicular Recreation Area, they experienced a 24% decrease in PM10, and it is believed that the 90 acres of new dust controls installed in 2020, along with the 7-month suspension of the vehicular activity, contributed to the largest annual decrease as compared to the 2017 baseline measures that are used. There was an air purifier program pilot that was approved, fund HEPA air purifying devices to low-income households in South County. I just received an email today. I didn't read the whole thing, but it looks like that is just really a success. There were the board election, and I was elected vice chair. Lynn Compton moves to the chair. The San Luis Obispo County of Governments, there was a community benefits grant. I discussed that already with Mr. Bronson, so that's information that he can pass along as needed. There were some federal transportation improvement funds that were secured to add an additional $40 million for the Highway 46 corridor, help fund those improvements from the Shandon rest area through that Y intersection where there was just that terrible fatal collision. And then the state Route 227 improvements, the traffic scenario, including two roundabouts, was approved. A number of residents in the Los Ranchos and Country Club and Crestmont neighborhoods, they opposed the transportation solution. However, many of their arguments regarding the design and signal synchronizing and so on just weren't valid based on the studies presented by staff. So a majority, it was a 9-2-1 vote, but we did decide to go forward with that. And those are my reports. Thank you.
Very good. Thank you for those updates. Let me turn to Councilmember Miller.
All right, thanks, Mayor. I attended a REACH Slow Advisory Commission meeting this past Wednesday. The members discussed scheduling a workshop to hear from key stakeholders on potential reuse of Diablo Parcel P. Some potential reuse of that area could include higher education, desalination, research and development, and future clean industry. The group also discussed the need to create a comprehensive economic development strategy, SEDS, for the region. So SEDS are federally recognized, locally based, and regionally driven grants from the U.S. Economic Development Administration, may be available for funding some of those initiatives. The EDA, can be used to fund efforts around equity, recovery, and resilience, workforce development, manufacturing, technology-based economic development, environmentally sustainable development, and exports and foreign direct investments. And no HSOC meeting yet. Thank you.
Very good. Next, I'll turn to Councilmember Robert.
Thank you, Mayor. This is a holdover from last meeting also. We had a Integrated Waste Management Authority meeting on February 9th, 2022. We met, recently acquired a board position that Karen Bright held. She served faithfully and provided leadership and committed as a member of the board of directors from 2019 to 2022. So thank you, Karen, for all your service there. They gave her a little party, a Zoom party. One of the items discussed was an FRP request for proposal for an annual auditor. The final ranking and selection was Brown Armstrong, certified public accountant. We also went over some budget reviews and directions, including consideration of modifying the expenditure freeze enacted on September 8th, 2021. We received a tentative improvement for a fee on gross hauler revenues of 5.4% to be effective July 1st, 2022. We set the next board meeting on March 9th to consider the final approval of that rate fee increase. We've completed a resolution for the 2022 authorization for the Cal Recycle grants, and all was pretty productive meeting. If you like more information and details regarding this meeting as well as others, and go to iwma.com. You can find it all there. Thank you very much.
Very good, Councilmember Roberts. And now, after having foxed him out, I will turn to Councilmember Rushing.
Thank you very much, Mr. Mayor. All right. So South County Chamber of Commerce, moving ahead as always, would be remiss if I didn't mention that in partnership with the City of Grover Beach, the Chambers of Commerce is helping us out with our Buy Local program. Buy $100 worth of merchandise from local businesses, go through the Chamber of Commerce and receive a $25 gift card at select businesses. We were able to bring in an additional $280,000 approximately during the last time that we did this last year. And I'm personally hoping that we can beat that out for our local businesses this year. On top of that, Zone 3, my next meeting there is going to be later this month. So you can anticipate you can anticipate an update for that when it is available. And that is all I have at this point. Thank you very much.
Very good. Thank you, everyone. So I did have two meetings. One for the Five Cities Fire Authority, where we did talk about a mid-year budget discussion. It is, as anticipated, a little bit leaner at the authority, based upon the fact that our funding expenditures have been in accordance with Amendment Number 3 for the last several years. However, there are some revenues that have come in that have allowed the authority to continue to be stable, and because of the reimbursements that we get from the state for use of our fire equipment and our staffing during wildland fire initiatives. And so there obviously is anticipated to be a revenue ballot item in Oceano. So once that is finalized in June, anticipated in June, then the authority can continue to advance on its initiatives and its strategic plan. So another quick item that we may hopefully never use, but we do have staff that are trained and will be provided as part of a MOU for CHP helicopter rescue. We do have some folks that are trained in that service, and if the service is needed in the South County, the CHP under mutual aid can call on those folks to help with that rescue. So that addressed the Five Cities Fire Authority, and then the South San District. We did have an update on the redundancy project, which is just over a year in the construction phase. Still has another year to proceed, if not more, and it is effectively on schedule and on budget at this time, even with the allocations, procurement issues that are currently happening in the rest of the world. The project is still on budget. So before we leave that, we do at our next meetings for both of those, expect to be back. in person. So my first in-person meeting for the South Sand District will be this Wednesday. And so anticipating that meetings are going to continue to progress towards in-person as we move forward. So next I'll go to council communications, see if there's any council members who have anything they want to share with the council and the public. Go ahead and unmute yourself if you have something. Looks like Mayor Pro Tem Bright.
Thank you. Just quickly, sanitation district is not sanitation district, but it's cleanup week, March 14th through March 18th, and you can place up to 6 bags, 32-gallon bags, not to exceed 75 pounds and 4 feet in length on your curb along with your trash bins. So anyway, that's, I think, really important to us. It is to me anyways. I always try to pass it along. Thank you very much.
Very good. Thank you for that. Next, I'll turn to Councilmember Miller.
Thank you, Mayor. Thank you for sharing that information, Mayor Pro Tem Bright. Very good to know. I would like to share that there's a county vaccine clinic that's scheduled for Wednesday, March 2nd from 3 p.m. to 7 p.m. at Grover Beach Elementary School. Free flu and COVID-19 vaccines will be available. No appointment necessary. And no insurance necessary. Thank you.
Very good. Thank you for that. I'll see either.
I'm sorry. Can we get the date again, please, Councilmember Miller?
March 2nd.
Very good. Thank you for that. I'm assuming during the course of school hours, I would imagine. Correct, Councilmember?
After school, 3 p.m. to 7 p.m.
Perfect. So 3 to 7. Okay. Very good. Appreciate that. Councilmember Rushing.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Just wanted to circle back and close out the meeting with during our budget review today, I couldn't help but notice the drop in revenue that we received from water rates from the awesome people of Grover Beach. While it is a drop, it is an incredibly important thing to note that it is an incredibly dry year, and dry years will continue in all likelihood. So I just wanted to thank the people of Grover Beach for conserving, even if we have to tighten our belts a little bit as a result. It is definitely, definitely a worthwhile cause. Thank you very much.
Very good. Appreciate that. Next, I'll see if Councilmember Robert has anything to share.
I just want to thank the community for all they do. And over at the Exploration Discovery Center, I drive by there every day. And they're getting over 70 children there every day. And it's just a great organization that's helping the community. And just want to thank them for what they're doing. So that's it. Thank you.
Very good. Great comments there as well. So I did have a couple of items to share. March 2nd, this coming Wednesday is going to be a busy day, as it is Read Across America Week. I'll be reading to some classes at Grover Heights on Wednesday, March 2nd. So that's always fun to do as well, to interact with the schools and Read Across America. Then also there is a Five Cities Homeless Coalition golf tournament coming up on April 2nd. It is an opportunity for members of the community to come out, play golf down at LeSage or Pismo Golf Course at the end of Grand Avenue, and support the coalition. So, which is a great segue possibly to just kind of address some of the comments and that I'm sure we've all been getting. We've had a number of thankful comments for the work that we're doing at the park, and we've had a couple of questioning comments for the work that we've done at the park at Ramona, specifically for the cleanup. And I want to say that obviously we listen to all the comments. We provide compassionate order, I think, is what we're trying to do as a city. We really want to take the safety of the businesses, the visitors, and the residents into account as we move forward with these this cleanup, but then also the safety and well-being of the unhoused individuals that are there as well. So it is a temporary situation, but we do want to make sure that we do take action where we can to make sure that all those that have an opportunity to get services are provided those services, but we do maintain an active and safe park environment as well. So just realizing that the comments are kind of coming in from both sides, and we do take that into consideration during all of our discussions on the subject, which closes my council communications with the fact that I did have the honor of hosting the mayor's meeting this past time, and we did have the new county homeless manager, Joe Dzwonek, speak to us and kind of provide a little bit of his vision from the county perspective as to where homelessness issues or homelessness progress is going to be taken while he advances under his employment with the county. And it really spoke towards regionalism. And I think that is a comment that a number of people have expressed, is that we really need to come up with a regional opportunity to address homelessness and the unhoused situation. In fact, as Mr. Bronson mentioned last time, it is a national situation that we're addressing locally. But I think all the cities and the county, if we can address it on a regional nature, we can start to make more progress together than we can as an individual city. And hopefully the lessons learned from past efforts, Mr. Dzwonek are taking that to heart, and we'll be working forward. So more to follow on that, I'm sure, as he continues to kind of settle into his new role. But with that, I'll close my council communication comments and turn it over to our city manager for any reports and comments he may have this evening.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor, council member. Just a few other items to add to that. One, adding to Mayor Lee's comments about homelessness, we did work diligently last week on some cleaning efforts at Ramona Park that included a temporary relocation of individuals who were there. It was really done just out of the safety to make sure we had this project site open and accessible for our crews to work on. So that site is being wrapped up this week, and then we'll take down the fencing around the park, and we'll continue to move forward with our mantra of compassion with order, finding opportunities to provide more shelter spaces, more housing units, more services to really help those who are unhoused while maintaining order within our public spaces so that they can be for all to enjoy in our community. It is a difficult balance, but one that we're committed to striking as a compassionate and pragmatic community that is trying to be a community for all. So much more to come in this area. Secondly, I wanted to acknowledge that next Monday will be our council goals special meeting, Monday, March 7th at 6 p.m. at Ramona Center. This will be the first in-person council meeting in 2 years. We look forward to resuming our work together in person and still providing a call-in option for members of the public who would like to still take part and participate through calling into the meetings as opposed to being there in person. But we also encourage the public to join us in person next Monday, March 7th at Ramona Center. And then March 14th, there on out, we are back in the council chamber for our regular council meetings here at City Hall. We look forward to resuming this and getting back to doing the people's business in person in our council chamber. We also are pleased to recognize we've had two new businesses that are joining our community. Last Friday, several members of the council took part in a ribbon cutting for a new yoga business called Empower Yoga Studio and Community Boutique on Grand Avenue. They are very excited to be part of our community and helping to operate their business, but also help support our community. And we're delighted to welcome them to Grover Beach. And also we're delighted that our new cannabis testing laboratory, Confidence Analytics, is prepared to open for business after going through a 2-year state licensing process to receive their necessary state license. And now they're ready to get their city permit. We've been very supportive and diligent in working with them. They're the only testing laboratory for cannabis businesses in this region. And so they are a key linchpin to the industry, and we're delighted to have them join us here in our community. And lastly, I want to just recognize and thank the council for your diligence tonight. We took some pretty significant items in the district election, public hearing 4, building fee study, and our budget update. And I appreciate the council's leadership in all these areas, and I appreciate our staff's diligence. There was significant time and effort spent over the last several months for all three of these items to bring them forward to you this evening. And I want to recognize our deputy city manager, city attorney, community development director, administrative services director, and others for their diligence and incredible staff work in bringing this forward to help bring these different items done. And we appreciate the council's leadership and trust in staff. And we look forward to implementing all the different items. Thank you.
Very good. Thank you, Mr. Bronson, for those updates. And for those of us who wear ties, I know we've been, shall we say, tie-less for the last several years. So I don't plan to wear a tie at our goal setting discussion on March 7th, but I am going to wear a tie on March 14th. So just anybody wants to join me on that meeting, we'll kind of figure it out after that. But back in person, I feel the need and the intent to wear a tie on March 14th. So sorry to my colleagues who may not want to wear a tie, but I will be wearing a tie that night. Anyway, so from that perspective, I know we do have a closed session this evening, and I'll turn it over to our city attorney to announce closed session and then provide any reports on comments prior to that if he so chooses. Notwithstanding the disappointment that I've just generated him for wearing a tie in 2 weeks.
A great disappointment. Yeah, Mayor, we hear about the convening closed session. This is in relationship to a conference with real property negotiators pursuant to Government Code Section 54956.8. This is in regards to a real property 060542-014, agency negotiators of City Manager Matt Bronson and Community Development Director Bruce Buckingham. Negotiating parties at this point are unknown, and under negotiation will be the price and terms of payment.
Very good. Appreciate that. And before we go to closed session, let me turn to our city clerk and see if anyone has called in for public comment under the closed session by dialing in at 805-321-6639.
No, we have no one on the line.
Very good. Thank you for that. I will go ahead and close public comment on closed session and anticipate that we will come back into open session to announce if there's any action in closed session, but we'll just take a moment as people just depart this open meeting for us to proceed
room
into
and can manage
session.
Your callers from the call-in studio web interface. Audio recording is on.